The markets are currently looking flat. The all-share index ended the day down 0.05% to close at 57,657 index points. Financials were down 0.4% and gold counters also fell by 1.3%. Industrials and resources were up 0.02% and 0.5% respectively. The gold price has continued to charge ahead. It's now trading around $2,050 an ounce. It was higher earlier in the day. The local currency is trading around 17.46 against the US dollar, 20.70 vis-a-vis the euro, and 22.96 against the British pound. Well, to break down the markets for us, I'm joined on the line by Wayne McCurry. He's a senior portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investments. Thanks very much for joining us, Wayne. So I suppose really things are looking rather lackluster today. And of course, market players are eagerly looking to see what comes out in terms of that fiscal stimulus deal that's still being negotiated between the Republicans and the Democrats.
Yes, I mean, that will be a strong influence on the markets. But, you know, the markets have had an incredible run. When you look at the overseas markets, they've done phenomenally well. And even our old share is basically at an all-time high. So markets have recovered very, very strongly since the worst that we saw in March. And when you think about what the economy is doing, you wonder why the markets are so strong. But, you know, be that what it is, and certainly we are waiting, the markets are waiting to see the details of that stimulus package. But we've had many stimulus packages already, and the market's taken them into account. Eh? So our old share, as you said, flat for the day. So it was up quite a bit at lunchtime, but then it just like faded out in the afternoon.
Yeah, like you say, there has been quite a lot of stimulus. Is it a little bit overdone?
Well, we don't know. We don't know the eventual cost of all of the stimulus. I mean, just using very round numbers, the total stimulus that will probably go into this virus epidemic and the financial effects of the virus is probably in the region of $15 to $20 trillion.
Wow.
That's the extent. Massive.
That's huge, absolutely huge. And then in terms of the earnings season, which will have reflected what happened in Q2, how, you know, what's your reading been of the earnings season so far?
Well, it actually hasn't been bad because it's been dominated overseas by the big FANG shares, the Facebook, Google, etc. So they've done extremely well in earnings. So they certainly have benefited from the lockdown. More people are buying online, more people are using their services, etc. And, you know, the commodity shares and the mining shares, despite the scare on the oil price, they're actually doing okay in this environment. It's really just the banks and the banks and financials and consumer-facing shares. And we see that here in South Africa. I mean, cell phone companies are certainly doing better, much better. And then in retail, some are doing well, some are doing quite poorly. The Pick and Pay didn't do well, but Checkers certainly did very, very well. And we still got to wait for the big banks to come up with their earnings for the 6 months to June.
Gold counters are down today, but of course they've had a very good run on the back of a much higher gold price. The gold price, however, is on the up. Your reading of this relationship and whether you would still put your money in a gold counter?
I would be very cautious. You know, just over a year ago, the gold index was 1,000. The gold index now is 6,500, so it's up over 500%, which is astonishing.
Yes.
I would be very cautious to put it into gold now. Of course, you will only hear good stories about gold. You know, you'll never hear a single bad thing as to why you shouldn't own gold simply because it's running so hard. But see, that's always the case. When something runs hard, you only ever hear good stories. And quite frankly, the good stories peak the day before it turns down. I would be very, very cautious. Because if you think about it, you can understand gold running because of the financial situation.
Yes.
Where the economies are. You could understand that. But why is gold running and the share market running at the same time? Normally they work exactly opposite. So one of them's wrong. Either the share market's too high or gold's too high. And I suppose we'll find out which one it is over the coming months.
But of course, the low interest rate environment does support gold for now.
And it supports shares for now. So that's why it's running.
Yeah.
Certainly that's why shares are running. Money overseas costs you nothing. And even in South Africa, I mean, we've had significant interest rate cuts and we've got no inflation on the horizon here. Inflation is probably going to stay well within the Reserve Bank's guidelines for the next year or two. So even really, we'll have low interest rates for a while. I would think unless the rand bombs out, which you never know what will happen there, but unless the rand bombs out, you know, we will have low interest rates for quite a sustained time period.
You say unless the rand bombs out. What does bomb out mean? Because, I mean, now...
Just 19.
19, yeah.
I don't think it is, by the way. I think the rand actually will probably strengthen back below the 17. Fair value for the rand is below 17. But unfortunately, the rand is a very volatile currency.
Yes.
Quite frankly, anything can happen. I don't think it's going to bomb out. And as long as the rand behaves itself, we should sit with reasonably low interest rates for quite a sustained time period, which will be very good news for our poor, embattled economy.
So MTN, they came out with their interim results, their half-year results.
Yes.
They've announced that they're going to be exiting the Middle East over the medium term. They're starting with Syria. Strategically, do you think that they've made the right decision?
Well, look, they need capital. So you can see they've passed their dividend. And MTN Zakhele is going to battle now with no dividend there to borrow $15 million from MTN to meet their commitments. And with 5G coming up, I mean, that is phenomenally large capital expenditure. So I think they're just scaling back on operations. You know, they've got to roll out the 5G in South Africa, in Nigeria, and all the other countries. Their balance sheet's already under strain. As I said, they passed their dividend.
Yes.
So I think they're just saying, we are scaling back in the smaller markets where we don't really get a adequate return on our capital.
Yeah.
And we all know the problems they've had in Iran with getting money out and their dividends were frozen. And, you know, there's huge potential in emerging markets, huge potential, but there's big risks.
Risks, that's right. Big risks indeed. And then in terms of Iran, what are they going to do? I mean, you can say we want to withdraw, but they've got a whole lot of money stuck in there from, you know,
yes,
the revenue generation and all of that. Do they just leave the operations running until the political situation, until November comes?
Well, who knows? I mean, it's such a volatile environment. You actually don't know. I know they've got a partner there, so maybe the partner will buy them out and, you know, make an adjustment on the price. But of course, you've got to get the capital out at
that's
some
right
stage, and that's been the problem for so long there. They're sitting with, I don't know how much, but enormous amounts of money that they just can't repatriate.
Yeah, very tricky indeed. And then I see that the Brent crude oil price has been steady around that $45
yes
a barrel mark. And that's despite, you know, talk of OPEC Plus possibly producing more oil, which, as we discussed with your colleague Chantel Marx the other day, it seems it really doesn't make sense because there will be flooding more
sense
product into the market. But it seems to be steady as we go.
Yes.
And on top of that, we do see the rand weakening somewhat, even though you're quite confident that it can pick up. So presumably that's going to mean more fuel increases for us at the pump going forward if these
correct
metrics don't change much.
Yes, very much so. So unfortunately, we're going to see, look, it's still off the $60 a barrel. It was, at the beginning of the year sometime. But, you know, Saudi Arabia, they might be making noises. They've seen what happens when they up production or they're threatened to up production. The oil price falls to below zero. And I think the 45 suits Saudi Arabia. They'd like more, but they know if the price goes up more, the U.S. shale gas producers come in to push the price down again, and they don't want that extra production from the U.S. shale. So although they would clearly like more, I think they're satisfied with $45, because at $45, they probably break even, although I've heard stories that they need $60 for the country to break even, because everything runs on the oil price.
Yes.
In many countries, but certainly in Saudi Arabia, everything runs on that oil price. But, you know, the problem is if it goes too high, U.S. shale is the swing producer. You know, they don't make money at $40. They make a little bit of money at $45, and they print money at $50. You know, so oil will probably sit between this 40 and 50 because of these massive swing factors. Either if it's too high, shale comes in, or if it's too low, you know, OPEC can just cut back on their quota production.
Yes.
And they cut back on the amount that they're holding back on. In other words, increase their production to get it back up again. So there's almost these two balancing forces below 40 and above 50.
So how does this translate into the Sasol story? I have been seeing rather positive analyses of how Sasol is trying to make a comeback. Your view?
Well, look, as long as the oil price holds at 45, Sasol will be okay. Because at 45, they probably will not have to do a rights issue. And I think that's bearing quite negatively on the share at the moment. Mm. And they are selling assets, and, you know, they did the big deal at Secunda. They've got a couple more deals to come through. They'll probably sell off part of their massive problem, which is Lake Charles. They'll probably sell off part of that. That whole project seems finally to be coming to an end. I mean, that it's not quite correct to say this, but it's not far off either. The amount of money that Sasol has, quite frankly, wasted in Lake Charles is more or less the amount of money that we need to sort out Eskom's debt.
Hmm. That's a lot. I thought it was 180 billion rand.
Well, you know, extra 200 billion to Eskom will certainly help them. They could probably, their cash flows at Eskom will probably be able to bear 200 billion debt. So if you were to take their 400 billion debt down to 200 billion, the Eskom problem's basically sorted out.
No, I hear what you're saying.
I mean, it's a phenomenal amount of money that Sasol, and time, because they're supposed to finish it 200 billion lower 4 years ago.
So
they've certainly learned a lesson there.
So if they streamline correctly and they don't make the mistake of throwing the baby out with the bathwater in terms of their disposal of assets, how long do you think it's going to take for shareholders, you know, to benefit from that investment in Lake Charles, which you're describing as a waste?
Because the money spent, they should start generating serious, as long as the oil holds, they generate serious cash flow from next year. So, I mean, Sasol has the ability to generate massive cash flows. The problem is the capital expenditure and the overruns at Lake Charles has eaten up all of that money and more. The shareholders should start to see a very, very good dividend flow starting to come out of Sasol next year. But the problem as to why we're sitting with Sasol now is that their debt was too high, and all the worry was around an extra rights issue of shares at a very discounted price to try and sort this debt out.
Hmm. And then, Wayne, lastly, just in terms of the announcements that we heard in terms of investments that were going to be made by a number of alcohol-related companies, SAB, Heineken, and Consol, who manufacture glass, which, you know, goes a lot into the alcohol industry. Are you concerned about perhaps this happening in other sectors in the economy, or you think it's just because this sector's closed and there's no revenue, this is why it's affected this particular sector?
Look, there are two factors, yeah. Given the massive negative financial effect of the lockdowns, lots of companies are going to cancel their capital expenditure because they just say there's no need for it. We don't have to spend it now. If the economy picks up and we get all the right structural reforms done by the government and our economy starts to fly, let's say in 3 years' time, they'll spend the money again. And you make no mistake, capitalism, if they can see a return, they will spend the money. But the second point is the alcohol people are also making a point by canceling all this, or saying they're going to cancel all the capex. I promise you, if alcohol and cigarettes were unbanned tomorrow, and demand returns to normal, they'll spend the money again next year.
Yeah.
But right now, as it stands now with the ban in place, they're not going to commit that money. So you mustn't think it's gone forever.
Yes.
And as I said, they're also laboring a point. You know, this is the consequences of banning alcohol, is that, well, how much is it? About 12 billion in total has been cancelled. Now, they also make a statement cancelled. But make no mistake, as I said, if the economy picks up, they will invest again because they can make money. So even don't think that it's gone forever.
Right.
But as I said, they're also playing a statement with the government now, considering the court cases. And they're clearly making a statement as well.
Wayne, thank you so much for talking to us for an extended period. That was Wayne McCurry. He's Senior Portfolio Manager at FNB Wealth and Investments.